Did you miss one of Sandy Clef's shows this week? Catch it on demand. Brought to you by SCL Mortgage, the home of MySpecialMortgage.com. Go to 1043thefan.com and click the On Demand tab for all of my shows. And it is good to be back with you on this Thursday night in the Mile High City for storm-related reasons. We were excused last night. Now, I was more than willing to brave the elements. Of course, I'd live less than a mile and a half from here, and I could walk. And it actually wasn't that bad a night last night, but boy, there was a hope you all got through yesterday safely. We know that there were some terrible accidents around town, inevitably. And we are pleased to be back tonight and thankful that we seem to have gotten through this period almost completely unscathed. And people are used to driving in this kind of weather. You have to be used to, if you live around here for any length of time, these kinds of storms in March. But the winds and the road conditions yesterday were hideous. And we are hopeful to get back to more seasonable weather in the days and weeks to come. Big news tonight, at least I think it's big news, because Todd Boyle up in Boulder, I think, is the most underrated and perhaps most underappreciated major coach we have in this area. And forgive me for excluding the high school coaches. They're outstanding high school football and basketball coaches without question. But on the major collegiate and major professional sports level in this city, I don't think there's a more underrated coach than Tad Boyle, who has now produced 6-20-win CU teams in 9 years. Very impressive for a team that was much more accustomed to losing 20 games or more in the years, if not decades, prior to his arrival than they were to winning 20 games. And certainly you have to go a long, long way back to find anybody who's had a run like this. And of course, you know, if you follow CU, that in each of Tad's first, I think, 3 out of 4 years, Colorado not only qualified for the NCAAs, but in one instance, they won an NCAA tournament game. And they went through a period, I think, of 4 out of 5 years in which they made the NCAA tournament, 12 through 14, 3 straight years, and then in 2016 for a fourth time in 5 years. The last 2 years, their teams have not been as good for a variety of reasons. And it looked like this year, through a combination of circumstances, including an injury at the beginning of the season sustained by Dallas Walton, their 7-foot center, that misfortune would bedevil the program again. They start the conference season with a very tough early conference schedule, and they go 1-4. They bounce back, they win to go 2-4, but then they lose their next 2 in a row. So they're 2-6 at about the halfway mark of conference play, 8 out of 18 games. They're 2-6. And you're thinking that there'll be a second division Pac-12 team for sure. They won't have much of a chance to repeat the string that they've been on ever since coming into the Pac-12, where they've won a Pac-12 tournament game, at least one Pac-12 tournament game every single year. And they're the only team in the Pac-12 that can make that statement since the Pac-12 became the Pac-12. And they started playing the tournament at Staples Center in Los Angeles. They're playing now year after year in Las Vegas. But they've always won at least one tournament game. And you're thinking after a 2-6 start, and obviously all 12 teams qualify for the conference tournament, but they're going to be playing on that first night, Wednesday night, or Wednesday afternoon. They're going to be a lower-seeded team. They're going to go up against a clearly superior team, and they won't be able to pull the feet off again this year. It might come to an end. They lose that first game. Well, they were not sharp yesterday against Cal, and I thought Tad Boyle put it well after they had finished the season winning three straight at home against Utah, UCLA, and USC. And the USC game I attended on Saturday afternoon was a terrific game, and that there is a rivalry, at least in basketball terms, between CU and USC seems undeniable at this point. And it might be more so than Utah, more so than any other team in the Pac-12. For basketball purposes, that's where the rivalry is most intense. The two coaches don't particularly care for each other, and that adds a little juice to a rivalry that would undoubtedly exist in some form or fashion in any case. They win that game, but they aren't sharp yesterday against Cal. It's a 5-12 game as far as seeding is concerned. Cal's terrible. And Tad Boyle put it well after the game. He said, I'm not sure anyone deserved to win this game today. The Buffs turned it over more than 20 times in the game. It was much closer than it had to be. But as was pointed out on the Pac-12 Mountain telecast, they did get that game in. And so they had played. And one game isn't going to really tire you out. It wasn't quite a tune-up game. It wasn't that easy. But they got by. And they face then Oregon State today in a 5-4 game in the conference tournament quarterfinals. And they've had trouble recently with Oregon State. And yet, it's Oregon State's first game. CU did have that playing time yesterday under game conditions, even against a bad team, and even in playing badly, that proved to be a big advantage. CU went up by as many as 21 points in the first half and held on to win the game. So they're now in the conference semifinals going against Washington tomorrow, and if they win that game, they'll have a chance to play for a spot in the NCAA tournament on Saturday. So congratulations to Tad Boyle for yet another 20-win season, another year to add to the streak of at least one win in the conference tournament, and a chance for CU with two more wins. And Jay Billis forecast it. We talked about it the other night. CU's done it before back in 2012. They needed to win four games to get into the NCAA tournament. They had to win the conference tournament, get the automatic bid. They did just that. They're halfway home to doing the same thing again in 2019. The Nuggets are in action tonight as we speak, playing a late game against the Dallas Mavericks. We'll keep you posted at the moment. It's Dallas 29, Denver 26 at the end of one quarter. Millsap has 12 of the Denver 26 points in the first quarter. When we come back, Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us to talk about the combine, free agency, the upcoming draft, and some of the things that happen that shouldn't in free agency, and some of the things that shouldn't happen but do happen in free agency. Dr. Perea up next on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
As promised, we welcome the Think One Behavior Design Specialist, Organization and Performance Psychologist, Dr. Rick Perea, to our studio. We've done this many times over the years, and we thought it would be appropriate, Rick, this week with the NFL season beginning on Wednesday, and of course, all of the legal tampering, quote unquote, which seems to be, at least to me, and I want to get your feedback on this as well, an oxymoron of sorts.
Right.
Legal
tampering.
Right.
What does that mean to you, and what do you make of this free agency process in general, as you look at it both from the inside in some respects and from the outside?
Yeah, well, you hit it right on the head, Sandy. Legal tampering, that's is an oxymoron in the literal sense.
Yes.
You know, among teams throughout the league, I've been traveling, obviously, through the NFL Combine, but yeah. Then I've been at a few facilities as well. And, you know, there's information that's out there that people know about and what players they're going after. And there's even communication between teams. But it's kind of held, under the rug, under the covers. But, yeah, there's a lot of communication internally, intrapersonally, and interpersonally, meaning there's communication among the teams, too, that probably – by legal terms, is not legal, but it's pretty common. It happens every day.
Unenforceable, basically.
Correct.
And as you suggest, goes back to the combine.
Yes.
These conversations all start at the combine, sometimes earlier, but generally the combine is a good place for all kinds of people to get together, especially agents. You go to the combine every year. Does it bother you that agents are there? Does it make what you do at the combine as a performance psychologist for, at any given time, numbers of teams, does it make you uncomfortable that agents are around? Does that affect your work?
Yeah. Well, no, it doesn't, to be honest with you, Sandy. My work occurs, just for the listeners out there so they understand, you know, they watch the testing during the day, all the physiological testing, the 40 time vertical jump, things like that. Our testing is from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. every night. So we're separated from that, and it's very specific. But what does bother me a little bit is that agents are involved in terms of influencing players' appearances there.
Absolutely. They coach them.
Yeah, they coach them. You know, sometimes a kid will test physiologically, but he won't test psychologically because he's under the influence of his agent. Because his agent will tell him the only thing that can happen is they're going to find defaults in you. So they don't test the psychological piece. And if they don't test the psychological piece, that raises a red flag for us right there. So it does influence our process somewhat, Sandy.
What was your opinion when Charlie Casserly, longtime NFL executive for the NFL Network now, comes out and says, at least initially, talking about your area, those interviews that take place at night, hey, Kyler Murray may fit all the physical requirements, but it was one of the worst interviews I heard from a number of people that he interviewed so badly. They put him up the whiteboard. He couldn't do anything. He was not conversant. And those of us who saw the Dan Patrick interview that Kyler Murray did before he made his decision to play football during Super Bowl week can probably attest to the fact that he wasn't a particularly willing interview subject.
Right.
On that occasion, what did you make of what Charlie Casserly had to say? Was too much made of it? Did it get blown out of proportion? He was only reporting what he said he had heard. Obviously, he wasn't in on any of the interviews himself. Should he have said nothing, something, exactly what he said? What's your opinion on that when someone from the outside who wasn't in on the interview process passes judgment on a player who is obviously among the more intriguing in this year's draft, if not the most intriguing?
Well, you touch on a real touchy point for me because, you know, for me, I don't comment on things that are out of my lane.
They're supposed to be confidential.
Yeah, they're supposed to be confidential, but you have people trying to guesstimate about the psychological aspect of this kid.
Right.
You know, in the interviews, I want people to understand all interviews measure is how well you interview. Okay, now that sounds redundant, but let me be very specific. Some kids don't interview well. But then they test well on the psychological test, and they play well. So interviews don't necessarily reflect how well that person's going to process, for example, on a whiteboard. A whiteboard versus the field, those are two different things, Sandy. I have seen quarterbacks that are great on the board.
They ace the whiteboard.
Yeah, they're great on the board, but you get them out on the field, and they can't process under that stressful situation. So Kyle's a kid that I think he's, I mean, I can tell you this, he tests better through the psychological exams than he did through the what we call the qualitative aspect, the one-on-one interviews and the interviews with the executives. But that doesn't necessarily mean he can or cannot play football. The speculation by the gentleman you're talking about is merely speculation. And I can tell you from a firsthand perspective, the kid did test better than what people are saying.
And, of course, he sort of walked back the comments recently by saying, hey, he's a great prospect.
Yeah.
Everything I saw from him leads me to believe that he can be a successful NFL quarterback, so on and so forth. When teams say, and I think John Elway has said this, hey, I rely more on the interviews I get when we can get people into our facility.
Right.
And we have more than 15 minutes.
Sure.
Is that true?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. You know, the top 30, every team brings in their top 30, and you get to run them through your facility. They get to go your strength and conditioning people, the people like me, the psychological people. But you get to observe them one-on-one. You get to observe them picking them up from the airport, how they treat people there. So it's much more revealing in the top 30 interviews because we get, like, for example, Sandy, when I interview a kid coming out in the top 30 prospect, I get them for an hour, just me. For a whole hour. So I get to do a lot of different things with them. And it's mainly qualitative, not necessarily quantitative, the written exams, but it's mainly face to face, you know, learning about their family, what their major was in college, but just getting qualitative data that will give me a real window into who they really are as people. Because Sandy, the thing we can't forget about these kids. They're football players, but they're people first. And they will bring their personality to the football field. So the more we can understand their personality, the more we will understand how they're going to react to the situation in the NFL that's very different than college. 99% of these kids dominated at the college level. So what that means is that, you know, for them, they don't have that psychological piece that now they're going to get hit in the mouth and caught in the NFL. Now their mental side is going to even be that much more important because they've never had to rely on that. In the past, they've relied on the physiological. Now they're going to be, you know, counted on to rely on the psychological. And that's why so many kids don't pan out in the NFL because they've never been tested at that psychological level. They've been able to dominate merely through the neck down, their physiological. But now when they get hit in the mouth, they get tested at an extreme level. Then their psychological piece will come in. Because I can tell you this, Sandy, having been a player, an undrafted free agent linebacker in the NFL, I can tell you there comes a moment in your brain when you say, do I want to do this or do I not want to do this? So that is the piece that we measure because that's what's different between the NFL and college.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of particular prospects when you talk about being able to determine to a large extent how people respond to adversity when they get hit. Do they hit back?
Right.
Do you look at that from a particular positional perspective? More so, I'm guessing, in linemen? On either side of the ball.
Yeah.
Both defensive linemen and offensive linemen absorb contact.
Yeah.
And they make contact.
Yeah.
Initiate contact.
Yeah, but you know, Sandy, there's contact all over the field. Even if you're corners or safeties or receivers, there's contact.
Yeah.
You know what we do is we measure how someone reacts, what's called on the autonomic nervous system. And what that means, on the sympathetic side, you have increased heart rate, increased respiration, muscle tension. That's called stress, okay? The parasympathetic is the calm side of all that. Decreased heart rate, decreased respiration, very little muscle tension, and clarity of thinking. When players live on the parasympathetic side of their autonomic nervous system, they will perform at peak levels. When players perform on the parasympathetic side, they will invite contact and collision. When they live on the sympathetic side, they shy away from it. So, yeah, we can literally measure that, you know, quantitatively, so we know how these players are going to react once they do actually get hit in the mouth.
Have you ever run into either an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman who didn't test well in that specific regard, but still turned out to be a good player.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that happens a lot when you test them, but then when they get out on the field, it's a different result. And that has to do with environment. See, there's only certain things we can control for in these tests. We can test the psychological, the emotional aspect, but we can't test for the environment. So let me give you an example. Some players will get drafted first, second, third round by one particular team. And they play under a certain scheme, they play under certain coaches, and they perform at a certain level. They get traded, they get picked up in free agency, whatever it may be, and all of a sudden that player plays at a high level. And they say, well, what's the difference? It's environmental, it's coaching, it's the climate and culture of that team. I've seen it time and time again where players will respond differently to different environments. We can't always control for that, Sandy, but I tell you what, I have seen it time and time again. And the Broncos just got a player from Miami that fits into that mold, so we can talk about more about that later.
We'll talk more about that later when we get into free agency. Very quickly, Vic Fangio has said from day one at his first press conference, if you play on the defensive side of the football for me, tackling's number one.
Yeah.
That's the chief priority. Would a coach like that look at someone who either has been somewhat unwilling or not particularly skillful when it comes to tackling and say, I want no part of this guy? Or would he say, I can teach this guy?
He can teach that guy. I know a little bit about Vic because he was in Chicago
when you were there.
Yeah. So, he's a guy that I know it really values tackling. But, you got to go one step backward. It's getting off of blocks, too, because you got to get off blocks before you can tackle people. And that's technique, too, Sandy. And you see it throughout the league. And I've been with several teams, as you know. And there are some teams that really teach what we call shedding of blocks, how to get off blocks. And there's teams that don't. So it's not just the tackling. You got to be able to get off blocks, too, before you get into that tackling phase. But I understand tackling is a really important phase of playing defensive football, because of what it does, Sandy, it sends a message to the offense that we're going to come after you. We're physical. We're really engaged in our process, but tackling and shedding blocks are key to being an effective defense.
More with Dr. Rick Perea. We'll talk about Think One, the behavior design specialist located, yes, right here in Denver on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Always a pleasure to have Dr. Rick Perea joining us here in studio, organization and performance psychologist, and it is Think One, the behavior design specialist. Before we go any further and talk about free agency a little bit, tell us about Think One.
Yeah, Sandy, we just went through a name transition. We were originally called DK2, Motivation and Performance. We are now called Think One, the behavior design specialist. We wanted our name to reflect what we do. We teach people how to think, Sandy. Mm-hmm. Control your thoughts. That'll influence your feelings. Your feelings influence your mood, and your mood, your behavior. So if you shape your thoughts, they won't shape you. 99% of the population out there, Sandy, their thoughts shape them. And that means if you have good thoughts, you're going to have a good day. If you have bad thoughts, you're going to have a bad day. But we teach people every morning to shape their thoughts. CEOs, pro athletes, high school athletes, adolescent athletes, people in the everyday business of raising their families have to be able to shape their thoughts. So that's what we do at Think One. We have a really cool facility off I-25 and Arapahoe Road. So we're out there. And if you guys want to understand how to shape your thoughts every day so you can be the best you can be, give us a call.
Are sometimes the youngsters better capable of shaping their thoughts than the CEOs who have perhaps done things differently for a long, long time?
Right. Yeah. See, their brains are trained over a long period of time. The neurological pathways get trained over years and years and years. So sometimes those adolescent athletes and adolescent performers are the easiest ones to train because their brain has what we call neuroplasticity, and they can change those neurological pathways a lot easier. But I would also say to the CEO that's been locked up in a certain way of thinking, we can also change and restructure the way they think so they can be the best they can be every day.
We just talked about the combine and about college football prospects now who are getting themselves ready from both the physical and psychological standpoint for visits that will be coming in the next few weeks, more extensive interviewing. The draft, of course, takes place on April 25th. We are right smack dab in the middle, or maybe even on the back end of the free agency process. Many of the big stars in free agency have already signed deals. And I guess my question to you is, does the investigative process in free agency get overlooked? Everybody understands why you would be checking out people who are unknown, who have never played a down of professional football before. Is there a tendency to relax those investigative standards when it comes to free agency and, for lack of a better term, fly more by the seat of your pants?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true, Sandy. People will rely on tape and tape only, their play on the field. But what they really need to understand, in my opinion, again, I'm biased because I'm a psychologist, is the psychological aspect. Because here's the key. Again, like I said before, a team can draft a player and he reaches a certain level of potential during his first 3 or 4 years, but then he can be developed at a higher level if we understand his personality, his psychological piece. You know, teams will oftentimes rely on each other. They'll call a coach they know that coach that player and say, well, tell us about him. But again, you're asking a football coach. You're asking a football guy. And what do football guys do? They rely on football knowledge. They don't rely on the psychological because they don't have that. That's why we're in place, Sandy, that we can give them the psychological piece, the piece that they don't quite understand. And the sad thing about it is that the NFL is a $1 billion industry, and I say that with a B, a $1 billion industry, and they still don't understand completely how to use the psychological aspect. Every team, when they pick up someone in free agency, should do the evaluation of the tape. I get it. But they should also do the psychological evaluation of understanding who this person is at a core level. Because some teams will invest multi-millions of dollars and that player will not pan out for him. And then they'll just turn around and say, oh, well, we missed on him. But why do they miss, Andy? That's the key. Why do they miss?
I know that we've talked about this at times before in the past. But I'm wondering, just in a general sense, and I'm not asking because I know you can't give specific answers, but do teams from other organizations ever call you about players you have been around?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they'll call me about players and they'll ask me, you know, who they are, what's my
right
qualitative take from them. Absolutely. And to me, those guys. And
so that should always be a part of due diligence on the part of any team, even if it means calling you and you've never worked for this organization. You've worked for other organizations. You might know a guy they're pursuing in free agency.
Yes, absolutely. Because I've observed these players at practice. I observe them in the lunchroom. I observe them in my office. The way they act quantitatively, qualitatively, that whole aspect. I have information about these players that nobody else has, Sandy. And that's the key. I'm not trying to act like I have the power seat in a whole NFL organization. But I've had a GM tell me, you know more about our players than anybody in our building. And I do. And here's why. Players won't tell coaches their blind spots. You know,
that's coaches, a sign of weakness.
Yeah, right? Coaches won't tell GMs their blind spots. So everybody comes to me and I'm the guy that they feel vulnerable with and they can share those things. So
right.
I usually know more psychologically about an NFL team and the players and how they comport themselves on a daily basis than anyone else in the building. So you're darn right that we should get calls from people asking us, who is this guy? How does he respond to what we call Viking drill, one-on-one with offensive linemen and defensive linemen? Is he a fighter? Is he going to go out there and kick someone's butt? Or when he gets hit in the mouth, did he put his tail between his legs? You know, Sandy, something I want the people to understand. A kid can be 6'6", 320 pounds, and he's soft. In other words, people think, well, he's got to be a monster out there. No, psychologically, they're soft. And so what we have to understand is, what is this resilience? You know, what is the conscientiousness of this player? And we can measure that, Sandy, psychologically.
I'm thinking of two linemen who played here. One's a Hall of Fame candidate. The other, I thought, was underrated. Maybe not a great player. I know them both pretty well. I'm thinking of Tom Nalen, who should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame at some point. He was a great center whether he talked to the media or not through the years, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Tom Nalen was not the biggest man on the field at any given time, and yet he would let no offense go unanswered.
Right.
One way or the other,
right,
he'd have his say. In a physical sense, he would respond. Now, he was a great player in terms of technique, but he had that mean streak. I think of Orlando Franklin, who works at our station now, and I've known Orlando since his rookie year, going back to 2011. We did regular weekly shows with Orlando over the years, and I know what kind of person he is. He is gentle. He is kind. He is insightful. He is bright. But I watched Orlando Franklin play football, and regardless of whether you thought he was an excellent player, a good player, an average player, a slightly below average player, a player who had a relatively short career, I remember here in Denver, whether it was Orlando himself or a teammate, you'd have to peel him off opposing players whom Orlando felt had committed some sort of transgression.
Yeah.
He would leave, again, no perceived offense unanswered. Nice guy, but on the field,
right,
had that mean streak. It was unmistakable.
Yeah.
It seems to me, whether it's a defensive lineman like Derek Wolfe, I think, too, very nice guy.
Yeah.
But on the field, he's pretty relentless and plays with great abandon.
Yeah.
Can that be something that is valuable for a team to know in free agency? Because I understand they see the 6'6", 320. They see someone, and I'm thinking sort of Juwan James in this framework, but not just of Juwan James. There are a lot of offensive linemen who fit the physical profile, but don't you have to do more than just scratch the surface on those guys and say, hey, this guy's been a 5-year starter in the NFL. That's pretty good for any tackle. And we've got Mike Munchak as an offensive line coach. He can be a great player for us because Mike Munchak will be coaching him.
Yeah. Sandy, you know, you touched upon something that is so important here. We evaluate in the NFL, and when I say we, I'm talking about the NFL in general. We evaluate players based on 90% of the physiological and about 6% of the psychological. But, you know, when you talk about Tommy Nalen, that nasty streak, that ability to go after people and play hard every single snap, that doesn't start in his quads, in his pectoral muscles, in his back muscles. It starts in the brain. It starts with how you think and approach the game. There are players that have everything you want from the neck down, but from the neck up, they're not psychologically wounded. When I say psychologically wounded, I mean there's something in their past that really puts a chip on their shoulder. You know, I'm around players all the time, Sandy, and I'm really marveled at players that have some kind of psychological wound, something in their childhood, something in their adolescence, some coach that told them they would never amount to something, and they never forgot that. And that is their motive. Motive is the root word of motivation. So there are players that just don't have a motor. They have the physical, but they don't have it. We've got to get better at understanding how to find the Tommy Nalens, how to find the Orlando Franklins, because that's psychological, Sandy. And so many times people will say, oh, this kid has all the measurables. Yeah, but if he doesn't have that psychological edge, that psychological wound, like you know, Aqib Talib has that psychological wound. You know, you can like
spades.
Him, dislike him, whatever. You know, the kid Ward that was here,
TJ Ward has
that psychological edge, that psychological wound, where they will go after people, especially on the defensive side.
Even bigger people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No reluctance whatsoever to go after
Sandy,
bigger people.
It reminds me of, like, when I was in college, I played outside linebacker, and I played on the weak side. And when I would blitz, I'm going against the biggest guy on the field. It's the left tackle, the offensive tackle. And they're often outweigh me by 60 or 80 pounds. The only way you beat that and defeat that is to believe you can. And that starts in the brain. So we've got to get better at being able to measure that little nasty streak in the brain so we can say, hey, this is a player that can come in here and compete. And not only that, Sandy, raise the intensity of practice. Somebody that can come in and say, hey, I'm going to go hard every single play and not take it easy. Sandy, there's so many guys in the NFL that are looking to take it easy and they're not intense every play. We need players that will play hard, and that's, I think, some of the top teams in the league do a great job at evaluating the psychological piece and getting players in their camp that they know will play hard every single down.
We'll talk about money and free agency because the two are inseparable in the first 24 hours plus of the free agency period, legal tampering, as it's called, $1.2 billion spent by teams around the NFL. Dr. Rick Perea continues with us next on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Rick Perea in studio with us. Dr. Rick Perea, the organization and performance psychologist. And we've talked about this, I can't even remember how many times. Money.
Yes.
Free agency and money, inseparable. More than $1 billion spent on players in free agency in the first 24 hours of legal tampering. The Broncos spend $55 million in guaranteed money on Kareem Jackson, the cornerback safety from Houston, and on Juwan James, the offensive tackle from Miami. That's real money. That's guaranteed money that those guys will definitely get. Kareem Jackson over 3 years. And with respect to Juwan James, I don't know exactly how the contract is structured. Maybe all the guaranteed money comes in the first 2 years, but it's a 4-year deal overall for some $51 million. When you look at the money, you're on the inside of this business. How much of a motivator is money? Can money change people? We know sometimes for the worse, but can money change people for the better? If a Juwan James is getting $32 million in guaranteed money, he feels secure.
Sure.
At least for the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, he feels secure. He knows he's getting that money. Does that release something in him that makes him a better player than he was in Miami, when I think by most accounts he was viewed as relatively an average performer?
Right. No, Sandy, it cannot motivate people long term. It can motivate them short term. Money can motivate people in a short window. And that's what we call intrinsic motivation, internal motivation. Money is not an internal motivator. It's an external or extrinsic motivator. So that's another piece that the NFL doesn't quite understand. The NBA is guilty of it. Major League Baseball is guilty of it. And you'll see many players that get really big contracts, their performance tends to go down, not up. We say we measure something in sports performance called psychological thirst. How thirsty is that player? When a player gets security, that does not foster psychological thirst. In fact,
It diminishes it greatly.
So what we need to understand is it's not necessarily the money that's going to get them to play harder. It's their own psychological thirst, their own drive, their own need. And guess what? What I would do if I were an NFL team, if I'm going to get a Juwan Thompson, I'm going to go find out. Juwan James. I'm going to go out and find out what his psychological core is.
Right.
Just as important as his tape. That's important to understand because, again, just throwing money at the deal is not going to get him to play at higher levels.
I'm going to give you a simplistic view from the outside. When I look at any player at any position allowed to leave his team in free agency, he's 26, 27 years old in what should be the prime of his career. He's been a regular starter. I don't care who that team is. They know that player better than the team acquiring that player, having him for the first time, knows him. My initial reaction the other night when I heard of Juwan James, for example, was, what's the catch here.
Yeah.
Why was he so easily available? It didn't seem like a lot of other teams were after him. Didn't seem like anybody in the AFC East was after him, and they see him twice a year when he's healthy. New England, not that New England would be in on somebody for that kind of money, but the Jets, Buffalo, apart from Miami, the teams that know him have seen him play all the time. There didn't appear to be any interest, and Denver, maybe not, bidding against itself, gives him all this money. With Kareem Jackson, it was a little different. It wasn't as much money, and it was almost as if the Broncos traded Bradley Roby to Houston for Kareem Jackson. They're both free agents. Roby goes from here to Houston. Jackson goes from here to Denver. Roby's younger. Jackson's more versatile. I look at that as an even exchange. Am I wrong to look at the offensive line situation and look at Juwan James, whom the Broncos don't know, and look at Matt Paradis, whom the Broncos do know, and wonder if their line got any better because they signed Juwan James and lost Matt Paradis to Carolina in free agency?
Right. Well,
and you've been around Matt Paradis. You know him well.
Yeah, absolutely. Both those linemen, I've been around him a lot. So, but here's the thing, Sandy.
Paradis is one of those mean streak guys.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, he plays hard every snap.
Plays injured.
That's the only way Matt knows how to play. That's in his DNA. He plays hard every play. But here's the key, Sandy. Each team is relegated to the pool of candidates that they're going to select from, okay? And the reality is maybe in that year, that pool of candidates is not the best. It's not great. So they got, you know, if Denver deemed they needed to get a right tackle.
Desperate for a right tackle.
They were going to go get a right tackle, whether they're great ones available, average or below average. They got to go get somebody, but they're relegated to the pool. And that's the key to understand. For my money, if I'm going to spend a certain amount of guaranteed money, I'm going to know everything I can about that player. And that information is readily available to the teams that value the psychological piece. And so the teams that will value that, I got a call this morning from a team this morning asking me about this certain player, telling me, you know, who is this guy? Tell me a little bit about him. What do you know? Because, again, these guys tell me everything, Sandy. They'll tell me their blind spot, their weaknesses, and I can't always share it with the team.
Right,
there's a lot in confidentiality, but I can say, hey, here's a green light. That kid will play hard. He'll play every down, and he's got a little bit of nasty to him. That's what you want when you get a guy in free agency, that he's going to raise the bar not only on Sunday afternoon or Monday night whenever they're playing, but it's in practice that they play hard. You know, one thing I'll always remember when I was with the Broncos as their performance psychologist is how Aqib Talib, when new guys would come in and we're in practice, he would hold them accountable to the level of play, to the hustle of play.
This is how we do things here.
This is how we do things here. And that's what you need, a guy that can come into practice and raise the bar of intensity.
Before I let you run, on the subject of free agency generally, as a team-building tool, as opposed to the draft, is it just as important, less important almost always, more important maybe at times? I think of 5 years ago when the Broncos brought in Aqib Talib, T.J. Ward, DeMarcus Ware, Emmanuel Sanders.
Right.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
2014.
Yeah.
And they were the heart and soul, those four players, of the Super Bowl championship team of 2015, 1 year later.
Right. Sandy, I think if you're going to make an impact quickly in this league, a shift from wanting to, you know, go from winning 8 games to 12 games, that type of shift, it happens in free agency. It happens quicker there because draft choices you have to develop. And most players do not come in as rookies and have impactful years. I said most, not all. Some of them do. But in free agency, you can, if you do your homework and you get people like what you just talked about, the DeMarcus Wares, the TJ Wards of the world, you can impact a team today.
They're transformational players.
Absolutely. And transformational players will make an impact again, not just on Sunday. Because you know what? Games aren't won on Sunday, Sandy. They're won on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday when teams prepare. And preparing means these athletes show up with an intensity level, an expectation level. And you can get that in free agency if you do your homework psychologically as well.
Quickly, Patriots let Trent Brown go.
Yep.
Boy, he looked good at the tail end of the season, especially at left tackle for the New England Patriots. They let Trey Flowers go. He signed for huge money with the Detroit Lions and his former defensive coach, Matt Patricia, who's now the head coach in Detroit. The Raiders and the Browns, too, but let's focus on the Raiders for the moment, sign Trent Brown, and they sign Antonio Brown, or trade for him.
Yep.
And everybody's going gaga over what Oakland did, and maybe to a lesser extent over what Detroit did. New England loses two guys, their best pass rusher maybe, and their starting left tackle at the end of last season. And nobody thinks that New England's going down the tubes next year, nor does anybody think, even with Antonio Brown and Trent Brown and some other additions they have made, nobody thinks that the Raiders are becoming championship contenders at this point.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, because what people
That's great talent the Raiders are getting and talent the Patriots are losing.
But, Sandy, we've often talked about this on your show. We're not just talking about talent to win, okay? It's about culture. You know, do you have a culture by design or a culture by default? The New England Patriots have a culture by design. So whoever they bring in at left tackle, they're going to fit that culture of expectations, that culture of intensity. You know, it doesn't, I won't go as far as say it doesn't matter who they put at left tackle, but whoever they do put at left tackle will be a culture player. Not necessarily a me guy, but a we guy. And that's what people need to understand. It's not just about amassing talent. If it was, you know, the highest payroll teams would win the Super Bowl every year. That's not what it is, Sandy. It's culture by design, and it's by bringing in players that fit your culture that you have designed. And New England's done that. The teams that don't understand that culture piece, they'll just keep amassing talent, and they'll keep spinning their wheels, because if you don't design your culture, it will design you.
Dr. Rick Perea has been our guest, organization and performance psychologist. Think One, here in town. Rappo and I-25, the behavior design specialists, and you can go to thinkoneforyou.org for more information. My friend, it is always a pleasure. I learn so much every
time
you're on.
Thank you, Sandy. I appreciate you having me on.
And we will continue with hour number two just ahead on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.